Welcome to Helpful Social Work. Social work has the power to change people's lives for the better. This podcast aims to help you learn, think, and act with integrity so people who need social work get help that will transform their lives. I'm Jo.
And I'm Jerry. And we are together for once.
We are. And we decided to have a special podcast in celebration of that fact. And I guess also to talk about the report that has come out of BASWA, the UK Social Workers Working Conditions and Wellbeing. If anybody hasn't grabbed it, it's worth a read.
Yeah, so this report is from Bath Spa University. Dr. Ravalier and Dr. Boychat have put it together, and it was conducted as an independent study. And although it's been done for the British Association of Social Workers and for the Social Work Union, it was an independent study, so the findings are completely independent of the organisations. And actually, you know, declaring an interest, I'm chair of BASWA. I saw the findings when the report was published, so didn't get a heads up on them.
Right, and in declaring a non-interest, it was me who said that we should do this podcast about it because it made me feel like, you know, as the more of us that are talking about this and paying attention to it, and in particular acknowledging the difficult situation we're in and then talking about the solutions, mm-hmm. the better off we'll be. I think that you know, social workers should really be putting their voice behind this and really, really taking it seriously, because there's a lot of serious things to think about here.
Yeah, so this report is important in itself. You know, the learning from this report is really significant, and it also crystallizes some of the things, the experiences that we've been coming across, and increasingly things that we've been, I guess, concerned about and hearing from social workers about the context that they're working in at the moment. So it is really timely to talk about this now. So yeah, if we talk about what the research says, and then we can talk about what needs to happen.
Sure. I think for me, the first thing that grabbed me, and it's not here on my little my little fact sheet that I've got in front of me, but was the fact that the study found that social workers remain motivated despite the context they're working in. And that made me heartened, and also what I felt about that was that we need to then take that motivation and use it to get better services to service users. We shouldn't be using it just to motivate ourselves to stay in the service, to manage to get to our job, to actually manage to get through a day. That motivation is being squandered, I guess, is how I felt about it. If it's being used just to get us through the day.
Yes, I was at the launch of the report on Tuesday the 30th of October, and Dr. Ravalier presented the findings and said a couple of things that really struck me. The first is that he's a non-social worker, and he was really shocked that the findings around the working conditions, which we'll explain in a moment, are really bad. It's quite a bleak picture. He's also struck by the fact that social workers care so much about their job that they are continuing to work. And the other thing that really struck me from what he said was that one of the really big motivations, one of the big things that people are concerned about, is the hardship that children, adults and families are facing. So although social workers want better working conditions, one of the better working conditions they want is sufficient resources to help people effectively. And actually, it's not just having sufficient resources to access, but also thinking of ourselves as a resource for children, adults and families. Social workers want better working conditions so that we can be helpful, not just for ourselves.
Well, I think that's right, because social work is a highly skilled workforce, actually, and there are many jobs out there where our skills can be utilised. If we choose to stay in social work, it's because that's the vocation that has our hearts and minds. And so, therefore, we are wanting to do the best job we can. And when a social worker asks for a desk or for good supervision or for safe working policies, it's not just out of their own individual concern. Yeah. It's about how they can serve other people as well.
So I'm going to talk really briefly about the methodology because I think that's quite useful for people to know, and then we can talk about the major messages from it.
Yep.
So it was a survey of over 3,000 social workers in the UK. The majority were in England, but also there were responses from Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. The survey was online. It was sent initially to all members of the British Association of Social Work and the Social Workers Union, which is going to be around 20-odd thousand people. However, it also was put out on social media, and I know that there will be people who aren't members of those organisations, social workers, who will have responded. The questions were around a range of elements of working conditions, and they were, as far as possible, things that could be benchmarked against other professions. So the major bit was about working conditions and stress, and that was using the Health and Safety Executive Management Standards to produced a survey tool, so to look at seven working conditions using the survey tool, so you could benchmark that against other professions or other occupations. And there was also questions around presenteeism, which is about going to work when you're not well. There are questions about intention to stay in the profession or to stay in a particular role, and there were also questions around service user behavior and the impact of I guess the stress that service users are also under, and how people might have experienced negative responses. And then the final thing was an open question around areas for improvement, which was, in one sentence, how would you make the role of a social worker less stressful? Mm. And there were respondents from across the whole, all the regions of the UK, and generally, let me just have a quick look at who responded. Probably useful to think about that as well. Around 2,000 children and family workers, around 600 adults, around 90 independent, and around 200 who describe themselves as others. And they could be direct practitioners or managers, any of those people. And it was majority, around 80-odd percent, would be female, rest male, and between kind of 5 and 10 years in role for most people.
Mm. So that sets the scene nicely for how the study was undertaken, and I'm just going to talk us through a bit of the key findings. I think the starkest key finding was that working conditions are worse than 90 to 95% of other UK employees in both public and private sector occupations. Nearly half of all social workers are dissatisfied in their jobs, compared to 41% in 2017, so that dissatisfaction is rising. Two-thirds have attended work while ill at least twice in the last year, and nearly 70% of social workers attend work while they're ill, so ill they should have taken time off. They found that levels of stress are much greater than the UK average, and the main stresses in particular were high caseloads, administrative loads, and lack of resources for service users. As well as that, they also found that 40% of social workers exposed to aggressive or physically abusive behaviours at least once a month from service users. And over 70% of them were exposed to negative behaviour and words from service users.
And I think it's really important to acknowledge that some of those behaviours and responses will be for the same sort of factors that social workers are experiencing, pressure and stress.
Yeah, it's about the skill base or the ways that you express yourself and what you do with your stress, isn't it? Yeah. But of course, if we're stressed, then the people that we're serving are going to be stressed as well, for sure.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about the working conditions, so going back to the Health and Safety Executive Survey, the areas that it looks at are the kind of evidence areas that impact on our stress, which is the demands of the job, how much work and what kind of work, the control we have over that, managerial and peer support, other relationships, role clarity and change and how that change is implemented. And all of those areas, apart from managerial and peer support, we're in the worst fifth percentile, which is worse than 95% of other professions or other occupations. Managerial support is a little bit better, and peer support is quite a lot better. And I think that's really telling as well, because what that means is, again, that social workers are putting energy into supporting each other.
Yes.
And great. That is a great thing. It also means that the energy for supporting
children, families, and adults, exactly. And that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, a social worker, you expect that the people that you're working with won't always have the skills to manage their stress in a way that is helpful or safe. And so therefore you are going to encounter levels of aggression and anger and distress. Mm. You don't need to also be carrying that or feeling that yourself in your workplace.
Yeah.
You know, so the resilience that social workers have is being utilized just maintaining the role.
Yeah.
And that's really sad. And that's led to one of the saddest stats, which is 60% looking to leave their current job within the next 15 months.
I find that, again, really sad. And I think one of the things that's interesting here to think about is that this report is saying the results demonstrate that working conditions for UK social workers, irrespective of their job role, are unacceptable. So the words of the report. Indeed, the health and safety executive suggests that should the working conditions measured in this study be at unacceptable levels for too long of a time period, i.e. they're chronic, then ill mental or physical health can occur. The buffering effect is the support that people gain from peers and management. And it seems to me entirely reasonable that somebody would be choosing to leave rather than become ill. And I just don't think any social worker should be made ill by their job.
No.
By their working conditions. It's right to say that that's unacceptable.
It is unacceptable, isn't it? And social work is such a vital, important role, and it's such a wonderful job and such a privileged job that we really need to be clear that the conditions have got to change. And I think there's a quote here, isn't there, from John McGowan, the General Secretary of the Social Workers Union, that he says, positive working environments are necessary for social workers' psychological and physical welfare and to keep social workers in post. You know, it's not too much to ask. And social workers themselves, of course, because one of the things I love about social workers is they're always trying to come up with ideas, aren't they? They're always trying to generate different ways to manage the situations they find themselves in. And so they talked about what could be done, what could be helpful. And they said, you know, that we do need positive professional working conditions to provide the best service. We need strong leadership to manage the demand on social workers. We need continued management training for social work managers. We really need to be doing active things to reduce the stress and provide well-being support. So more than just reducing the stress, actually then repairing the damage in a way, isn't it? Actually providing that well-being support. That we need time for reflective supervision to work through complex cases, manageable caseloads, and a consistent approach to caseload allocation. Employ more social workers. That was something the report was really clear about, wasn't it? It was really interesting. They say in it, one of the ways to manage this is to employ more social workers. And they acknowledge that in these financial times, that might not be a possibility, but yeah, reverse the blame culture and give social workers respect and positive support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's detail behind those kind of headline things in the report, and I'm just looking at it now, and it's really interesting. So nearly 2,000 of the 3,000-odd respondents said workload.
Yeah, and we hear that all the time, don't we, Jerry? So when we're training, when we're working with social workers and managers and enthusiastic, passionate people, they get really excited about the things that we offer, about the tools, about the different ways of working. And at some stage during that encounter that we have with them, they'll go, oh, but how will we find time to do this? You know, our caseloads are so high. So that feels like a kind of barrier that's there often for them.
Yes, and it's broken down into some, you know, the improvements are broken into some really sensible areas. So can we lower caseloads? Can we co-work the most difficult cases, please? Can we have more staff, fair allocations of caseloads, some more unqualified staff, you know, non-social workers to support us? Cap on the number of workers that any one manager manages. And then also, are there things we can do to reduce the bureaucracy, the bureaucratic burden? So can we review whether we need all of this paperwork? Could there be more administrative support? And could the IT systems make the reporting and admin less demanding? And these are all really practical, pragmatic, kind of positive solutions that are being offered. Similarly with the resources for service users, this is much more out of our control in a way as professionals, but you know, not enough resources due to austerity to fully support all service users. We want managerial support around when we're encountering difficult behaviour. We need reflective supervision and managerial support around that, recognising that that means that managers need to manage fewer staff at times. And when there is change, which there's inevitably going to need to be, could there be more communication, consultation, clearer reasons for change? So really solution focused again. And then the final big area, working practices. You know, hot desking means that you're scrambling for a desk. It means that you're not seeing your colleagues.
That you're competing, competing with your colleagues for resource, which makes it really hard to be supportive sometimes.
Yeah, so there, you know, some of the comments here. If hot desking is necessary, can we have the same rules for management and staff? Can we have a room or space somewhere which is empty for 2 hours across lunch? Can we not schedule meetings between 12 and 1? Let's use flexible working to help us rather than be pushed into it. And then again, the respect and understanding, that seems like a practical, doable thing. So I suppose one of the things that strikes me about this is that social workers are not asking for the moon here.
No,
asking for what you would expect for,
and a lot of the things they're asking for. Just, I mean, and it'll be interesting. Anybody out there who's listening to this might be able to help me with some of this stuff. But it strikes chords for me from the Munro report. Yeah. It really does. Like, look, I'm just sitting here thinking, I'm sure that Eileen Munro wrote a lot in her systems paper about these very things, about the IT, about admin, about, you know, the supervision and all this kind of stuff. I'm sure that there was a lot of those suggestions there. And so there's something about, we're not asking for the moon, but how do we actually make these things happen on the ground is what we're struggling with, I guess.
Yes. That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? It seems to me that this kind of evidence is unignorable.
I hope so. And that's the thing. I guess that's the reason we're doing the podcast, isn't it? Is, can we try to make it unignorable?
Yeah.
Like, I really am so keen to encourage everybody to actually ask their member for parliament to read this, to get on board, to talk about it, to share it as widely as we can, and to actually start having this conversation, because social workers are unable to do their job.
Yeah.
And that has a huge impact on children, families and adults that are waiting for the help that we say we offer.
Yeah. So it seems to me that the kind of big things here are, first of all, we have to accept that this is the reality.
Yes.
And that means, I hope, for social workers, recognizing that this isn't social work isn't failing.
No.
The conditions are failing us.
Yes.
And that's a really big distinction, and I think a really important one to hear. The second thing is that we need people who can make a difference to this to make a difference, and that is primarily going to be about the political decision about resourcing. So Baswa is with SWU running a campaign around working conditions, and across the four countries of the UK we are encouraging social workers, as Jo says, to talk to their elected representatives, to talk to their members of parliament and members of assemblies, to get people to not just say, oh, that's important, but to actually commit to doing something about it. And the other big group we need to work with is employers, and we will be working with employers. One of the things that will happen in the new year is that there'll be a toolkit to sort of take action against some of these things within the workplace to overcome some of these issues. And that will require employers to actually enable staff to take different actions.
Yeah.
And I think that leads me on to the final thing, which is if we remain in a situation where we don't have enough resource, we will have to do less. Or
yes.
We will lose social workers.
Yes.
So we are going to have to start being really transparent about what a caseload can be and what it can't be.
Mm.
And I would like us to get to a position, we've talked about this, Jo, haven't we, where social workers do not give other social workers work that they can't do.
Yes, absolutely. But just passing the problem round and round and round is not the answer either. And there's something for me, and I've talked with, you know how I feel about the fact that if you put someone on a list, if you say to someone that you're going to give them a service, even though you know because of your caseload you can't do that, that person is like frozen waiting for that service. It's almost better not to offer them one, in my opinion, because then that forces them, perhaps, or forces everybody to look elsewhere. Mm-hmm. But as long as we're pretending that we're offering somebody something, then there's a feeling that they're being offered something.
But you see, the trap that social workers are in, and this is where I think a lot of the pressure comes from, is that the law and guidance says we should offer X
to everybody.
And we know we can only offer Y.
Yeah.
And we are trying to make up the gap by sacrificing our own time and well-being. And to say to social workers, we can't keep doing that, isn't enough.
No,
we
that's
need to
right.
make it possible for them to feel able to do that ethically and with, you know, with backup. So this is about changing the understanding of the public about what we can offer. It's about enlisting the support of the people that we're there for around what we are able to do. And it's about working with employers and government to be realistic about that gap.
And to have honest conversations about it. I think that's what I'm looking for. And then kind of not sympathy, but action. I don't think that social workers need or want or are looking for sympathy. I think that what they're looking for is change and a chance to do their job well.
Yeah. And one of the things, just to kind of finish up, I guess, one of the things that came up in the launch on Tuesday was we talked in groups, and there was practitioners and service users and organisational leaders from the managers from the four different countries hearing this report and these messages and talking about what needs to happen. And one of the things that somebody suggested was, let's change the Ofsted ratings or the inspection ratings so that there's good, requires improvement, poor and under-resourced. Because one of the problems that we have at the moment is that we are saying services aren't good enough, but we're not saying anything much about the context. It's happening more and more,
it
but
is,
there's still not enough understanding of the impact of...
Well, there's certainly some study around, isn't there? I can't remember, Jerry, you'll probably know better than I, that talks about the fact that most of the authorities that are failing have very high caseloads.
It's the National Audit Office report from last year. So, it showed clearly the link between worse Ofsted ratings, inspection in England ratings, and the higher caseloads, agency staff and vacancies in English local authorities.
Which all sit around resourcing as part of the issue. So, yes, we need to acknowledge that there is a direct impact on that.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's also a direct impact on communities, isn't there? If local authorities are actually not managing to pay their bills, then actually the people who live in those authorities are going to be struggling more as well. And that means that the level of need and deprivation that social workers are dealing with in those authorities are going to be more and more difficult. That context will be more difficult too. So,
So,
we don't want to be doomsday people, I don't think. I'm not trying to sit here and say that it's all doom and gloom. I don't think it is. You know, we should hold on to the fact that people keep coming into social work, that there are new social workers coming in that are motivated and bright, and that there are experienced social workers who are staying in social care. But I do think that we need to, that it's not wrong to ask for the resources we need and the support we need to do our job well.
Yeah. The idea that by trying harder or being smarter, you can overcome lack of resource is very clearly shown not to be the case. These working conditions impact on the ability to help children, families and adults. And all social workers and the professional body and the social work union will do what we can to campaign for this to change. And the message, I suppose, is that firstly, that the language around social work has to change so that it recognises whenever we're talking about social work, we're talking about it in its context and we're talking about social workers in the conditions that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll do what we can to get a change.
Yep. Well, we hope that you've enjoyed our little, I don't know really what that was. It was just an opportunity to share what we were thinking about and what we've been talking about for the last day.
Yeah.
And we've been doing that in the context of meeting and working with remarkable social workers and people who work in children's services right across a lovely multi-agency group of people. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of inspiration that we're gaining as well.
Yeah. And we'll both be writing to our MPs.
Yes, absolutely.
I'll be turning up in Westminster for the meeting on 27th of November with English MPs.
Good.
And we'll be looking out for the toolkit in January and trying to work with employers to do things differently
whenever
we can.
Yeah.
And I will also be talking to everyone I know, all my family and friends
Absolutely.
And acquaintances and everyone down the pub and everyone on the bus about the need for this to change.
Yeah, we just need to keep raising awareness the whole time, don't we? We need to be loud and proud of being social workers.